You're listening to The Patriot Cause with Bud Cornwell, United States Marine Corps retired, standing guard on the Wall of Freedom.
Here's Pete from Tucson, Arizona.
I'd like to ask Pat what the average layman can do to help take care of America and give us a direction to go.
I think the best thing to do, look, if you get involved in a political party at the precinct level, there are about 175,000 precincts, and they say all politics is local. So get involved in the local precinct politics, and then build some people along with you, and then get a few more and a few more, and make sure they understand the fundamentals of what made this country great. What is it you're trying to get across? We need to not have personalities. We need to have a program. What do we stand for as Christians? What do we stand for as, well, whatever party you're in? What is the message we're trying to bring across? And you say, well, what should I do? That's what you ought to do. Get steeped in a message that will resonate in people's hearts. And I don't think we're having that now. We're facing what looks like socialism, and some of the things being introduced are just iniquitous. And I think if we have a positive message, it's going to win, all right?
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price.
My dear patriots of America, can we actually save this country? Is it possible to reverse the events of what is going on in our country back to freedom and liberty and not tyranny? This COVID thing has absolutely destroyed this country, put tons of fear in the average citizen of this country. I still believe in my heart that it's not over. It looks bad, and we're facing tremendous challenges. But I'm going to present to you tonight a way to understand those challenges. See, in the military, we always have these challenges. We always face difficulty, obstacles, things that we have to overcome. But the difference is, Americans, most of Americans in this country, are no longer facing tremendous difficulties. Well, maybe in the last couple, 6 months. Especially if you got to pay your rent, pay for your gas bill for heating, pay for gas in your car. These are difficulties. How do you overcome these difficulties and change your environment? How do you get involved and engaged when you're being awesomely, tremendously being infiltrated by all of this stuff, all of these changes from economic to political to family, separation between the families, which has happened in my family, How do we overcome all of that? Number one, you have to be strong. Number two, you have to believe in God's plan. Have no fear whatsoever. Be concerned. Do the right thing in this world, but have no fear. Because the world is the world and will never change it. It's kind of like living in a twilight zone where all this stuff comes on you, and then you're thinking in your mind going, how in the world did this happen? You know what? It doesn't matter how it happened. What really matters is how do we face it? How do we come from our lives in a simple state of liberty and freedom into a tyranny environment? How do we adjust to that? How do we become part of saving America? Hopefully I'm going to bring you some ideas that sink in your brain that helps us to understand how we save America. The introduction that you heard was from CBN, which is, to me, a good introduction. Not necessarily that I follow CBN, but Robert is talking about what is true, that we have to get involved at the lowest levels of government and correct it there and go to the next step and go to the next step. Because communism has infiltrated all the way down to your front porch. I've said this for years. It's here in your front porch. And you're looking at it going, what the hell is that? Why am I being infiltrated by these leftist, socialist, communist people in my backyard in everything that I do? Because they, unlike us, are active. Think about that word. There's a very small people in this country that are using bullhorns to speak out and pass on to you what they believe life should be, which is absolutely wrong, because Satan has infiltrated through communism in this country and is now trying very hard to take down this country and eliminate God. That's how simple this works. They're doing everything from politicians to laws to massive government to destroy this country and absolutely take control from a manly standpoint, from a mind of a man. But this country was not developed by that. We had men that were under tyranny, but the majority of them, the vast majority of them, understood the only way we can create a new country with the freedoms of the Bill of Rights, of God-given, inalienable rights, was through the Bible, through the conceptual idea that there is a larger creator than us. And they understood that, and they created this country which is the greatest that has ever, ever existed in the history of the world. So I'm going to bring to you thoughts, ideas of how we can save America. What can you do to save America? This is from John Whitehead, the Rutherford Institute. It is our job to make the government play by the rules of the Constitution. That is what the Rutherford Institution is. So John tells us, where do we fit? Do we have a say in what happens in our nation? Can we write our own ending? Or are we nothing more than actors in a play whose ending has already been determined? I, for one, believe that as long as there is a spark of freedom left, then there's hope. I believe that too. As long as people want to be free, there's hope. As the poet Charles Buckenwitz writes, a spark can set a whole forest on fire. This is what the left is doing. But the conservatives are not doing it. The Christians, the people that believe in this country, are not doing it. These people are starting fires, not only vocally, but physically. But yet we sit back and we look at what's happening and going, I don't have any kind of ability to change it. Of course you do. Our country may be in deep trouble, but there is still something that you can do to remedy the problems. It is understandable that many Americans feel overwhelmed. How many of you feel overwhelmed? I feel overwhelmed every day. Every time I wake up, I feel overwhelmed in the world. I don't feel overwhelmed with eternity. I have no fear whatsoever of what's going to happen to me. If I die tomorrow, thank you, Jesus. Because that's where I'm going. I'm going to heaven, and I know that. I know that my life is dependent upon the Savior that created everything, the whole universe, and I rely on that. Powerless and discouraged in the face of the government's expansive powers. This is how we feel, that we're powerless. Unlimited resources and military might. Even so, that is no excuse for standing silently on the sidelines. I can't put it any better than that. If you feel overwhelmed, powerless, and discouraged in the face of the government's expansive powers, I might say, then why in the hell are you sitting on the sidelines? I'm not. I'm doing what I can. I got a podcast. I'm on the radio. I'm talking to you. I go to school board meetings. I try to vote for the right people. I talk to the people, if I can, that I'm going to vote for. I'm not sitting on the sidelines. I'm in the fight. I was a Marine for 20 years. I know what being in the fight is. I was trained with courage, tenacity, integrity, all those things that are necessary to stand up with massive power, even as an individual, but even more as a unit, to stand up for what is right. I can't speak for the military today. I've been retired for 20 years, and I've seen a lot of changes. But I do know, and I am in contact with active duty Marines that are in the Marine Corps, and they feel the same way I do. That the government, the wokeness of this country is pressing down on them to conform to their ideologies of what life is supposed to be, which is absolutely wrong. If we end up as a country accepting all this wokeness, Disney, all of this stuff, what's going to happen is this country is going to turn in to a massive Sodom and Gomorrah that has never been seen in the history of the world. And I guarantee you, God will correct it, just like he did during that time frame. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a very long clip. It's 16 minutes, but it's very important to listen to this. And then when we get back, hopefully you have a better understanding of what you need to do as an American citizen to save your country. This admiral was a Navy SEAL. And he explains in detail how simple it is to have the pride and ability and the fortitude to take the next step and move forward and be successful. That's what Americans need to do. Get rid of this ideology that we have, this infiltration into our country of, number one, people that don't believe in God. Number two, people that will not have any discussion with you on how to correct this country. So take a great listen to Admiral McRaven. It is worth every single minute.
What starts here changes the world. I have a few suggestions that may help you on your way to a better world. And while these lessons were learned during my time in the military, I can assure you that it matters not whether you ever served a day in uniform. It matters not your gender, your ethnic or religious background, your orientation, or your social status. Our struggles in this world are similar, and the lessons to overcome those struggles and to move forward, changing ourselves and changing the world around us, will apply equally to all. So here are the 10 lessons I learned from basic SEAL training that hopefully will be of value to you as you move forward in life. Every morning in SEAL training, my instructors, who at the time were all Vietnam veterans, would show up in my barracks room, and the first thing they'd do was inspect my bed. If you did it right, the corners would be square, the covers would be pulled tight, the pillow centered just under the headboard, and the extra blanket folded neatly at the foot of the rack. It was a simple task, mundane at best, but every morning we were required to make our bed to perfection. It seemed a little ridiculous at the time, particularly in light of the fact that we were aspiring to be real warriors, tough, battle-hardened SEALs. But the wisdom of this simple act has been proven to me many times over. If you make your bed every morning, you will have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task, and another, and another. And by the end of the day, that one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that the little things in life matter. If you can't do the little things right, you'll never be able to do the big things right. And if by chance you have a miserable day, you will come home to a bed that is made, that you made. And a made bed gives you encouragement that tomorrow will be better. So if you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. During SEAL training, the students, are all broken down into boat crews. Each crew is 7 students, 3 on each side of a small rubber boat, and 1 coxswain to help guide the dinghy. Every day, your boat crew forms up on the beach and is instructed to get through the surf zone and paddle several miles down the coast. In the winter, the surf off San Diego can get to be 8 to 10 feet high, and it is exceedingly difficult to paddle through the plunging surf unless everyone digs in. Every paddle must be synchronized to the stroke count of the coxswain. Everyone must exert equal effort, or the boat will turn against the wave and be unceremoniously dumped back on the beach. For the boat to make it to its destination, everyone must paddle. You can't change the world alone. You will need some help. And to truly get from your starting point to your destination takes friends, colleagues, the goodwill of strangers, and a strong coxswain to guide you. If you want to change the world, find someone to help you paddle. Over a few weeks of difficult training, my SEAL class, which started with 150 men, was down to just 42. There were now 6 boat crews of 7 men each. I was in the boat with the tall guys, but the best boat crew we had was made up of the little guys, the Munchkin crew, we called them. No one was over 5'5". The Munchkin boat crew had 1 American Indian, 1 African American, 1 Polish American, 1 Greek American, 1 Italian American, and 2 tough kids from the Midwest. They out-paddled, outran, and outswam all the other boat crews. The big men in the other boat crews would always make good-natured fun of the tiny little flippers the Munchkins put on their tiny little feet prior to every swim. But somehow these little guys from every corner of the nation and the world always had the last laugh, swimming faster than everyone and reaching the shore long before the rest of us. SEAL training was a great equalizer. Nothing mattered but your will to succeed, not your color, not your ethnic background, not your education, not your social status. If you want to change the world, measure a person by the size of their heart, not by the size of their flippers. Several times a week, the instructors would line up the class and do a uniform inspection. It was exceptionally thorough. Your hat had to be perfectly starched, your uniform immaculately pressed, your belt buckle shiny and void of any smudges. But it seemed that no matter how much effort you put into starching your hat or pressing your uniform or polishing your belt buckle, it just wasn't good enough. The instructors would find something wrong. For failing the uniform inspection, the student had to run, fully clothed, into the surf zone, then wet from head to toe, roll around on the beach until every part of your body was covered with sand. The effect was known as a sugar cookie. You stayed in the uniform the rest of the day, cold, wet, and sandy. There were many a student who just couldn't accept the fact that all their efforts were in vain, that no matter how hard they tried to get the uniform right, it went unappreciated. Those students didn't make it through training. Those students didn't understand the purpose of the drill. You were never going to succeed. You were never going to have a perfect uniform. The instructors weren't going to allow it. Sometimes, no matter how well you prepare or how well you perform, you still end up as a sugar cookie. It's just the way life is sometimes. If you want to change the world, get over being a sugar cookie and keep moving forward. Every day during training, you were challenged with multiple physical events, long runs, long swims, obstacle courses, hours of calisthenics, something designed to test your mettle. Every event had standards, times you had to meet. If you failed to meet those times, those standards, your name was posted on a list, and at the end of the day, those on the list were invited to a circus. A circus was 2 hours of additional calisthenics, designed to wear you down, to break your spirit, to force you to quit. No one wanted a circus. A circus meant that for that day, you didn't measure up. A circus meant more fatigue, and more fatigue meant that the following day would be more difficult and more circuses were likely. But at some time during SEAL training, everyone made the circus list. But an interesting thing happened to those who were constantly on the list. Over time, those students who did 2 hours of extra calisthenics got stronger and stronger. The pain of the circuses built inner strength and physical resiliency. Life is filled with circuses. you will fail. You will likely fail often. It will be painful. It will be discouraging. At times, it will test you to your very core. But if you want to change the world, don't be afraid of the circuses. At least twice a week, the trainees were required to run the obstacle course. The obstacle course contained 25 obstacles, including a 10-foot wall, a 30-foot cargo net, a barbed wire crawl, to name a few. But the most challenging obstacle was the slide for life. It had a three-level, 30-foot tower at one end and a one-level tower at the other. In between was a 200-foot-long rope. You had to climb the three-tiered tower, and once at the top, you grabbed the rope, swung underneath the rope, and pulled yourself hand over hand until you got to the other end. The record for the obstacle course had stood for years when my class began in 1977. The record seemed unbeatable until one day a student decided to go down the slide for life head first. Instead of swinging his body underneath the rope and inching his way down, he bravely mounted the top of the rope and thrust himself forward. It was a dangerous move, seemingly foolish and fraught with risk. Failure could mean injury and being dropped from the course. Without hesitation, the student slid down the rope perilously fast. Instead of several minutes, it only took him half that time. And by the end of the course, he had broken the record. If you want to change the world, sometimes you have to slide down the obstacles head first. During the land warfare phase of training, the students are flown out to San Clemente Island, which lies off the coast of San Diego. The waters off San Clemente are a breeding ground for the great white sharks. To pass SEAL training, there are a series of long swims that must be completed. One is the night swim. Before the swim, the instructors joyfully brief the students on all the species of sharks that inhabit the waters off San Clemente. They assure you, however, that no student has ever been eaten by a shark, at least not that they can remember. But you are also taught that if a shark begins to circle your position, stand your ground. Do not swim away. Do not act afraid. And if the shark, hungry for a midnight snack, darts towards you, then summons up all your strength and punch him in the snout, and he will turn and swim away. There are a lot of sharks in the world. If you hope to complete the swim, you will have to deal with them. So if you want to change the world, don't back down from the sharks. As Navy SEALs, one of our jobs is to conduct underwater attacks against enemy shipping. We practice this technique extensively during training. The ship attack mission is where a pair of SEAL divers is dropped off outside an enemy harbor and then swims well over 2 miles underwater, using nothing but a depth gauge and a compass to get to the target. During the entire swim, even well below the surface, there is some light that comes through. It is comforting to know that there is open water above you. But as you approach the ship, which is tied to a pier, the light begins to fade. The steel structure of the ship blocks the moonlight. It blocks the surrounding street lamps. It blocks all ambient light. To be successful in your mission, you have to swim under the ship and find the keel, the center line, and the deepest part of the ship. This is your objective. But the keel is also the darkest part of the ship, where you cannot see your hand in front of your face, where the noise from the ship's machinery is deafening, and where it gets to be easily disoriented, and you can fail. Every SEAL knows that under the keel, at that darkest moment of the mission, is the time when you need to be calm, when you must be calm, when you must be composed, when all your tactical skills, your physical power, and your inner strength must be brought to bear. If you want to change the world, you must be your very best in the darkest moments. The ninth week of training is referred to as Hell Week. It is 6 days of no sleep, constant physical and mental harassment, and one special day at the Mud Flats. The Mud Flats are an area between San Diego and Tijuana where the water runs off and creates the Tijuana Sloughs, a swampy patch of terrain where the mud will engulf you. It is on Wednesday of Hell Week that you paddle down to the Mud Flats and spend the next 15 hours trying to survive this freezing cold, the howling wind, and the incessant pressure to quit from the instructors. As the sun began to set that Wednesday evening, my training class, having committed some egregious infraction of the rules, was ordered into the mud. The mud consumed each man till there was nothing visible but our heads. The instructors told us we could leave the mud if only five men would quit. Only five men, just five men, and we could get out of the oppressive cold. Looking around the mud flat, it was apparent that some students were about to give up. It was still over 8 hours till the sun came up, eight more hours of bone-chilling cold. The chattering teeth and the shivering moans of the trainees were so loud, it was hard to hear anything. And then one voice began to echo through the night. One voice raised in song. The song was terribly out of tune, but sung with great enthusiasm. One voice became two, and two became three, and before long, everyone in the class was singing. The instructors threatened us with more time in the mud if we kept up the singing, but the singing persisted, and somehow the mud seemed a little warmer, and the wind a little tamer, and the dawn not so far away. If I have learned anything in my time traveling the world, it is the power of hope, the power of one person, a Washington, a Lincoln, King, Mandela, and even a young girl from Pakistan, Malala. One person can change the world by giving people hope. So if you want to change the world, start singing when you're up to your neck in mud. Finally, in SEAL training, there's a bell, a brass bell that hangs in the center of the compound for all the students to see. All you have to do to quit is ring the bell. Ring the bell, and you no longer have to wake up at 5 o'clock. Ring the bell, and you no longer have to be in the freezing cold swims. Ring the bell, and you no longer have to do the runs, the obstacle course, the PT, and you no longer have to endure the hardships of training. All you have to do is ring the bell to get out. If you want to change the world, don't ever, ever ring the bell. It will not be easy. Start each day with a task completed. Find someone to help you through life. Respect everyone. Know that life is not fair and that you will fail often. But if you take some risks, step up when the times are the toughest, face down the bullies, lift up the downtrodden, and never, ever give up. If you do these things, the next generation and the generations that follow will live in a world far better than the one we have today. And what started here will indeed have changed the world for the better. Thank you very much.
So ask yourself where you are in your life and your struggles. Are you still willing to save America? And this is what Admiral McRaven said. Life is a struggle and the potential for failure is ever present. But those who live in fear of failure or hardship or embarrassment will never achieve their potential. Without pushing your limits, without occasionally sliding down the ropes head first, without daring greatly, you will never know what is truly possible in life. This is the truth. And the majority, not all of them, but the majority of the millionaires did this. This is how they became millionaires. They focused on their life, and this is what they wanted to do. It's the same thing for every citizen on the planet. If you want to be something, you can. Only, again, in a free society. If the government tyranny comes on you, then they determine what direction you go. And I'm going to give you a great example of this. I got a friend of mine that is from China. She is a professor at the University of Arkansas. And I talked to her in detail about her life and how she grew up in China. She started school, and you have a number of students, which we're all familiar with, that go through, you know, from the primary school to the second middle school to junior high to high school. And they have the same kind of process. But what happens is when they get to the eighth grade, they're looking at their scores and their knowledge, and they separate the students. And they say, okay, you're going to go over here and you're going to retread tires and you're going to go to college. The government determines that, not the student. The government determines who's going to do what. So let's say you happen to be able to selected or become a selectee to go to college, which means now you're in that track. As you're progressing along, they're monitoring you virtually every day to make sure that they made the right decision. And if you end up not being able to track yourself into college, then they push you over to retread tires. And she told me that something that was very interesting. When these students get out of what we call high school, they all go to college together, kind of like a family. Unless you have a rocket scientist, then they send them to a different college. But they all go to college because it's all paid by the government. And she told me that I didn't know any new people that came into the school because all these students that I was around was kind of like a community family, and we all went to school together. There's kind of pluses to that, but there's a huge minus to that. What that means is, all of these students are being progressed and controlled by the government. They have no determination on their life. There is somewhere around 47 to 50% of college students that fall out of college in America. Rightfully so. They don't have what it takes to go to the next level. Let them go retread tires. But they make that determination, not the government, not the education system. If it's too hard for them, fine. Go find another job. And that's what they do. And thus, capitalism is based on that. It's based on people understanding their limits and where they go and their potential for failure. If it gets too strong on a student and they continue to fail, then they got to find another place. They've got to find their niche in this world. And a lot of them actually go out of college or never get to college and they become millionaires. Walt Disney is a great example. He was actually dishonorably discharged from the army because of what he did while he was in the army. But then he grew one of the greatest companies in the history of the United States, never opened up a college book. That's what freedom is. It's the ability to determine your life on your own, not dictated by tyranny. You're going to reach a wall in a freedom world, and then you're going to have to cross that wall. If you can't cross that wall or it's too difficult, then you find another wall to cross. You find your niche and how your life fits in to this society. You will never know what is truly possible in your life, just like the Admiral said, until you hit that wall. If the government is in charge of that wall, they're the ones that tell you where you go when you hit it. That's the difference between freedom, liberty, God-given rights to choose your life and how you want to go. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Please share it far and wide. I do the research, so you don't have to. Come to the podcast, listen to the truth, and spread it across the globe, across America, because you are not going to hear this ever in the mainstream media. And I'm hoping and I'm praying, which I'm seeing the results of it, that podcasts are popping up everywhere, and eventually this media controlled by the government and their narrative will end, because Americans have a voice again. This is the Gunny out.